Hi, and welcome back to Women Rule. I'm Carrie Budoff-Brown, editor of Politico. We're talking today with two Politico tech reporters, Nancy Scola and Margaret Harding McGill, a fellow three-namer, like me, as I like to call her. Margaret Harding McGill covers the FCC, and in particular, she's focusing on net neutrality. And our other reporter here is Nancy Scola. Nancy, welcome.
Thank you.
Nancy writes about all these great stories dealing with Facebook and Twitter and Google, and they amaze me all the time with the reporting they dig up. I look back at myself being a reporter, and I don't think I was half as good as, like, most of my reporters. Stick around for that conversation. On the Women Rule podcast, we'll be bringing you backstage with women leaders, the big bosses in politics and policy. If you're a fan of the show, please subscribe to Women Rule on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us and leave a review. And please share our episodes on social media and follow me on Twitter at @CBudoffBrown. Women Rule is produced by Politico in partnership with our founding partners, Google and the Tory Burch Foundation. And now a word from our presenting sponsor, Chevron. When more girls go into science, technology, engineering, and math, the whole world benefits. With the support of families, schools, policymakers, and businesses, girls can do remarkable things with STEM. Chevron is proud to join Women Rule in empowering the next generation of female leaders. And now, our talk with Politico tech reporters Margaret Harding McGill and Nancy Scola. You know, I wanted to bring you both here because tech is you know, so much dominates the White House coverage, Congress coverage. Tech is huge right now. I mean, obviously, it's you know, threads into the White House with the election last year, the power of the platforms, net neutrality, which, you know, Margaret, I want to start with you because net neutrality is a woman's issue, or at least that's what some of the advocacy groups are claiming right now. But first, I think we might want to rewind and just, Margaret, give me like your best, briefest, smartest Cliff Notes version of what the hell net neutrality is and why this matters.
Sure, no problem. Okay, so net neutrality, which has been a really long running fight at the FCC, is this concept that your internet service provider, like your Comcast or Verizon for your cell phone service, should not be able to interfere with the websites you go to. So they shouldn't be able to slow down your access to those websites. They shouldn't be able to block your access to those websites. And they shouldn't do these like pay-for-play fast lanes, which if a company pays the money, they'll get access to the website faster. So those are kind of where the current rules are. And right now, Republicans at the FCC are looking to roll those back.
And why this is an issue right now? Because then President Obama put in new, harder rules. And it's been has Trump made an issue of this? Is this what he wants to do in terms of rolling it back or at least revising it?
Yes, the White House has been, well, they were supportive very early on on changes to these rules. They haven't talked about them recently, but the current FCC chairman, Ajit Pai, was a commissioner at the agency during the Obama era, and he was very much against those rules at the time. So Trump picked him to be FCC chairman, so it was no surprise to anybody that he wanted to change them. He thinks the rules are hurting investment and are limiting the services that cable companies and other internet service providers can offer.
What is the next moment that people need to be watching for on this in this debate with the rules?
Yeah, so the chairman put out his proposal back in, officially it came out in May. And since then, there have been 22 million comments, which is record-breaking. Yeah, it's a lot. And when he put out this proposal, he said, hey, we want to wrap this up by the end of the year. So we have we have an FCC meeting later this month, but we have one meeting left where we don't know the agenda, and that's in December. So everybody's watching to see if he comes up with a full new set of rules this year.
So talk to me about an argument that we're hearing or we're reading a little bit more about, that women may be disproportionately impacted by a change to these rules. How so?
Yeah, so Democrats are picking up this argument, and the Democratic Commissioner Jessica Rosenworcel spoke about this a few weeks ago. She pointed out that net neutrality is a civil rights issue and specifically a women's rights issue. And she talked about the Me Too movement, which highlighted sexual harassment, sexual assault, and said, hey, broadband providers shouldn't be the ones amplifying these voices. It should be us. And without net neutrality rules, there is a risk that your cable company could elevate voices on the internet or show you only voices that they want you to see. So that's kind of the argument on. And then that also goes to Pantsuit Nation, the Women's March. Net neutrality advocates point to these as like women using the internet to connect.
The argument is that corporate America or companies are largely run by men or white men, and they could have a chilling effect. They can turn off access or lower access to sites where women have a voice, or they, and so that would disproportionately affect them. Is that, do you buy that?
Yeah, I mean, I do a bit. I think part of the argument for the internet has always been that it's a way of distributing power to the powerless, and not that women are powerless, but it's a way that women can sort of grab more hold in media, in commerce, in all sorts of places. And one of the other examples people point to is Etsy, which is an online platform that people use to make a bit of side money, and they tend to be women who are selling things on that platform. And that's a, you know, that was just a website that somebody created and said, okay, we're going to give people the ability to sell their goods and services online and not have to ask anybody's permission, and that tends to benefit women more. So that's the argument, is that men tend to be the gatekeepers in all sorts of places. The internet has fewer gatekeepers in other places, and so it's more beneficial to women if it remains a free and open medium.
Are they getting any traction, those who are making this argument, in the fight to keep the rules as they are, Margaret?
I don't think that this argument is going to hold a ton of weight with Republicans at the FCC. They seem to have a pretty clear idea of their issues with these rules. And when you talk to other Republicans more broadly outside of the FCC, they might argue, hey, it's not ISPs, internet service providers, that are the ones acting as gatekeepers. Look at Twitter. And they'll point to content regulation happening on Twitter's platform. Twitter is a net neutrality supporter, but they kind of have gotten into trouble lately for things like shutting down a campaign video from Marsha Blackburn over concerns that it was inflammatory because she mentioned stealing baby parts.
And she's a U.S. congresswoman.
Yes.
And just give us the background on that controversy.
Sure. So in her campaign video, she's running for Senate, and she talked about how she tried to stop the sale of baby body parts, which were false accusations in reference to Planned Parenthood.
I'm 100% pro-life. I fought Planned Parenthood, and we stopped the sale of baby body parts, thank God. I'm Marsha Blackburn. That's why I'm running for the U.S. Senate, and I would be honored to have your vote.
And the company said, hey, this is inflammatory. And they since revised their opinion and allowed her to promote that ad after all.
And so your point being that we already have situations where internet service provider, I'm sorry, where platforms are censoring or making judgment calls. And what's the through line then to net neutrality in that case?
Well, the argument that you hear from Republicans is if you want to talk about true blocking of content, it's on these platforms. It's not your gate. It's not your ISPs that are really the problem. It's these other websites. Now, the counter to that has been in the past, hey, it's easy to go to a different website. It's not so easy to switch your internet service provider. Yeah. But when you think about the dominance of some of these platforms, I don't know how true that is anymore.
So, Nancy?
Well, and this is where Margaret's reporting and my reporting sort of bleed together, because I focus a lot of attention on this question of big tech, whether some of the country's biggest tech companies are just too big and too powerful to be kept in check, either by government or by the public. So there's discussion both on the Republican side. Steve Bannon has been a proponent of the idea that these companies, Facebook, Twitter, Google, are so big that they should be treated like public utilities. It's an argument he sort of made for a couple months. No one paid much attention to him, even though he was Steve Bannon and in the White House at the time. But just last week, Senator Al Franken, who's a Democrat from Minnesota, sort of picked this up and said, hey, maybe we should apply net neutrality principles to some of these, to Twitter, to Facebook, to Google, because they are making decisions about the content that we see online that are just too – they're shaping the way that American culture works and the American economy works. So we need to pay more attention and maybe put more restrictions in place. So that's – I was writing a bit about net neutrality last week, which is Margaret's whole business, but it is sort of like crossing over to these conversations about
these
websites.
So what's the mood in Washington regarding...
Angry.
Yeah. Angry towards these big tech companies,
absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's bipartisan.
It is. It's definitely Democrats are sort of, at a 9 on the anger scale, and I think Republicans are closer to a 6 or 7.
And why are Democrats more angry? Is it the election?
I think they've had more practice at it, just holding companies sort of responsible for bad behavior. And then I think a big part of it, the current discussion is around Russia and whether there was Russian interference in the U.S. presidential election using social media. Republicans haven't been super eager to talk about the idea that the election was in some way unfairly settled. But they have sort of since grabbed onto the idea that, yes, they have to pay more attention to the power that these companies are wielding.
So to that point, let's talk about when Sheryl Sandberg came to Washington a couple of weeks ago at a lot of attention paid to her visit here. What do you, Nancy, make about why they sent her versus any other figures from Facebook?
It's a good question. In some ways, she's the most logical choice. She's a high-profile executive. She's the chief operating officer at Facebook. So she's not a CEO, so she's not going to get beaten up on in the same way a CEO might. So Facebook's keeping its top officer out of the spotlight, which is a good thing for them. She's also a known quantity in Washington. She spent some time in a previous administration working in the Treasury Department, I believe. So people know her. So that's a good thing when she's going around having Hill meetings. But at the same time, she's sort of, what Silicon Valley's attempting to do right now is humanize themselves. And there's a way in which she seems approachable, sort of responsible in a way that some of these other executives don't. So I think, it was sort of a good choice on a number of levels for them to send her here.
Is that because of her? How much of it has to do with that she's a woman?
I mean, it's certainly a question I've asked, asked myself at least.
And what have you told yourself about that you've asked yourself that question?
I think it helps. I think when you look, they were sort of trying to figure out somebody to be the public face of this debate. And, I think it doesn't hurt.
You think she helped at all? I mean, what was your final take on that trip here?
I think she did. I think she's pretty widely respected in Washington in a way that some of these other executives aren't. She knows how to talk Washington in a way that they don't. She got a sort of a harsh reception, though. She came and talked. She had some meetings on Capitol Hill with the intelligence committees talking about Russia behind closed doors. We're still trying to figure out what happened in those meetings. There's still more digging to do. But we do know she met with the Congressional Black Caucus to talk about the use of Facebook to exacerbate racial tensions during the election. There were some ads run by groups that purported to be associated with things like Black Lives Matter that we now know were placed by Russian forces. She met with the Congressional Black Caucus, and they said, we've been complaining about this for months, even years. You've done nothing about it. It's time that you step up. If you don't step up, we will, and there will be government oversight of your platform in the way that we've never done before. And I had a source who was very familiar with that meeting. They said it was heated in a way these meetings don't tend to be. And they said, she was there 2 years ago speaking to the Congressional Black Caucus. That meeting was cordial. This one was not.
Yeah.
So it's
notable
they,
shift.
Yeah, and I think that they, I think in some ways she was here to take the temperature, and I think I have to imagine she went back and said, oh, yes, we are in a bit of trouble in Washington.
So what do they do? What is Facebook? What is Google, Twitter? How much trouble are they in right now?
Well, it's interesting that we talk about them a lot as Facebook, Google, Twitter, sort of this monolith.
Sorry.
We do it too. I mean, my fingers automatically type the three in order. But
yes.
But Facebook as... And this is the horrible joke we've all made, is that Facebook has leaned in, to borrow Sheryl Sandberg's phrase, into this Russia investigation. They have admitted that they did wrong in some ways
they tried to say that they didn't.
Oh,
right?
Yes.
Like,
there was some...
Yeah, Mark, it was shocking to me right after the election when he's like, we had nothing to do with it.
Yes.
And I think most people at that point knew that wasn't the case. So, yes, they had ground to make up. But at this point, yes, they've shown quite a bit of...
Yes.
Effort, I guess.
Yeah, in a way
months.
That the other companies have not. And it was explained to me that all the companies, they have sort of, they get together and talk about these issues. They're not operating in sort of silos apart from each other. And they decided that we're going to have to take a beating on this. And Facebook decided to get it over with in a way that the other companies have sort of took another tactic and said, let's hold back as long as we can. So they're going through that process right now.
And how would you describe Twitter and Google's handling of these questions, the increased debate around how much autonomy or how much more restriction should we place on them?
It's Yeah, every company is different. Obviously, Twitter is just a much smaller – it's a much smaller platform. It's a much smaller company. They don't have the resources to deal with some of these questions in the same way. So they've clung a little bit more to the idea that they're an open platform for free-flowing debate. They've moved in recent months to take down really egregious content, you know, beheading videos, that sort of thing. But they still sort of, you know, cling to the idea of the way our platform works is that it's pretty open and people can do what they want on it to some extent. I mean, they've taken more steps than they were taking 2 years ago, but they still sort of are in that camp. Google, in some ways, this is sort of a tech reporter's like dorky joke, but like they've benefited from the fact that they've been terrible at social media. So, you know, when's the last time you're
Google
on Google
Plus?
Google Plus, exactly. And, you know, the joke was Russians didn't abuse Google Plus because there was no point because there's nobody else on there. So they've stayed out of the limelight a bit.
We'll be right back with more Women Rule, but first, a word from our presenting sponsor, Chevron. When more girls go into science, technology, engineering, and math, the whole world benefits. With the support of families, schools, policymakers, and businesses, girls can do remarkable things with STEM. Chevron is proud to join Women Rule in empowering the next generation of female leaders. With Twitter, but, you know, talk about bullying, right? Like, mm-hmm. women do not have the greatest experience on Twitter. And have they taken, I mean, is there any, that's just still free-flowing, right? The bullying,
And they certainly have in recent months accepted that they haven't done a terrific job at that and are starting to take steps to address that. And I think, you know, the jury's out of whether or not that's actually made the experience better for women on the platform, but they have talked. The CEO, Jack Dorsey, has talked pretty openly about the sense that he has that he needs to sort of do things differently than they have in the past.
What has your experiences on Twitter been, Margaret?
Well, for people who see my Twitter account, they'll see that I tweet the headlines to my stories. And that's it. That's it, because I like to have that be my social media. Is just, here's what I'm writing about, here's a story that I find interesting, and I try and keep it just the facts.
Why is that? What does it say about you? I guess tell me, get me a little bit deeper into your head. Like, why only that? Why do you not put yourself out there further? That's what people in Washington do.
I guess that's what people in Washington might do. That's not what I do. I want my reporting to speak for me. I don't really see a need to amplify it and say, look at me, look what I have. Here's what I'm all about. Here's what I had for breakfast. I think I'm a little bit weird in that way that I don't mm-hmm. want to put everything on the internet, mm-hmm. but I don't. I think it's a really slippery slope, and I'd rather not have opinions and other things out there. I'd rather just have stuff that I think is newsworthy out there.
Mm-hmm. I endorse that position. Anybody
oh, no.
in the newsroom would know that. Nancy, what's your approach to Twitter?
I'm a little bit more, how do I say, I enjoy a discussion on the platform. So I don't stick to sort of just my reporting, but I stick to the topics that I cover, generally speaking. Also women's soccer. I tweet about women's soccer on occasion because I'm a big fan. I've had a fairly positive experience on the platform, I think because I am generally sticking to technology issues, which can get heated but not gendered. I think the one thing that I experience is people explain things to me that I've been covering for many, many years. That's always enjoyable.
Are they usually men who are mansplaining
to you? I think that's probably fair to categorize.
But you haven't had any sort of harassment that you stuck in your mind or that you've found troubling at all?
I think there have been creepy direct messages that pop up every so often. They don't tend to be the sustained sort of back and forth that I think a lot of women get when they write about things that are more sort of attention getting.
I think Nancy does a really good job about being conversational about our topics and the things that we cover. I just am a little bit nervous about putting my toe in the water in that way, just in case it can get viewed in a way that's biased or opinionated or could come back to haunt me somehow.
Yeah.
I think one thing for me is that part of the reason I write about technology is I'm sort of a geek. I like technology. I grew up liking technology. I used to really like the internet very much, and I'm sort of unwilling to give away some of these mediums that, you know, should be about conversation and debate and thought-provoking ideas and just sort of giving them up to people who are, you know, aren't afraid of engaging on those platforms, I think. Maybe not willing to do that yet. I still mourn the blog, the death of the blog. Mm-hmm. It was a fun place to have some of these discussions, mm-hmm. but if in the absence of that, Twitter's what we have.
I mean, Twitter's the conversation. So talk to me then a little bit, just a segue into, you know, the story that everybody's talking about, and that's sexual harassment in every sector possible, right? Tech companies, I sort of view it as like tech companies sort of, other than I would say maybe Gretchen Carlson last year with Fox, which I really felt put this story firmly like in the conversation in a way that I hadn't seen before. Really a lot of the women in tech stepping forward, really remarkable stuff, right? Earlier this year in particular, you, Nancy, wrote about Susan Fowler for our Politico 50. And why? Well, why was she key? Tell us who she is and what she started.
Well, she so she was an Uber engineer who when she left Uber, she quit Uber, I think about maybe 18 months into it. And people questioned, why, you're a young engineer, why would you leave an up-and-coming company like Uber? So about 2 months after she quit, she wrote a blog post explaining her experience at Uber and how it wasn't overly positive, a lot of which had to do with her gender. The interesting thing for me is, I'll be honest, I was assigned that profile, and God bless the editors here, that they chose her as number 8 on the list of a Politico 50 for her importance in sort of like generating conversation and ideas in Washington in the last year. In response to her blog post, which described things that, you know, some of it was just straight up offensive. She was propositioned on her first day by her manager. When she reported to HR, they said, he's a high performer, there's nothing we can do about it. But some of it was just absurd, that the experience that she described. So she talks about how they were going to order leather jackets for their unit.
Yeah, that was remarkable.
Because they had done well or some such thing. And they said that the female engineers could not get the leather jackets because there weren't enough of them to qualify for the bulk discount. That was just sort of a perfect, you know. But so that was also the tone of the post was, you know, she was a young woman. She wasn't broken by this experience. She just thought, hey, this kind of stunk. And, you know, here's how it went down for me. And it just caught people's attention, I think, because it was Uber and it was very high profile.
Yeah.
The company responded by launching investigations into their workplace culture. And 6 months later, the CEO stepped down. And I think before reporting that piece, I sort of knew those things were related. I didn't quite realize how direct a correlation it was between she wrote this blog post, people started looking into it, people, you know, they lifted the hood at Uber and realized it was a mess. And what you hear from people is, you know, Uber is not alone in being a startup, a company that's not quite a startup anymore, that still feels like a startup and is just run as sort of like a frat house. And so, yeah, it was a pretty direct correlation between her sort of like, you know, getting new management at Uber. And then from there was a, you know, a wave of stories about other people in Silicon Valley, other men that had behaved badly, that they had to step down. This CEO of SoFi, which is like the online lending platform, he had to step down. A bunch of venture capitalists had to apologize and that sort of thing. And then the wave kind of kept going into like other, you know, other industries. So I think there's, you know, you don't want to overplay it, but I think Susan Fowler, this one Uber engineer, I think she's maybe 25 or 26, sort of really started this conversation. Yep.
Is anything changing in tech? Have you seen any tangible outcomes other than, you know, violators being pushed out of their jobs? You know, what can tech point to at this point in terms of changing the culture or the incentives or the, or is that just like a much longer term?
Yeah, I have to imagine that's something that's going to play out and sort of down the road a bit. I think one of the, this is sort of in the weeds, but one of the places that there's most discussion about this is in the venture capital world, because you have young entrepreneurs going essentially they're asking for money and then asking for mentorship, which for women can be a strange experience, right? And it's supposed to be in some ways a very intimate, personal, one-on-one relationship you have with your venture capitalists. And in the past, that's been abused in some ways. And women just don't feel welcome in that world. So they don't get funding to start these companies, and then the companies don't grow. So I think if there's sort of a change in that world where they're starting to say, hey, women haven't had a great experience, let's fix that, we might only see the after effects of that in 5, 6, 10 years.
I wanted to ask both of you, I've asked this question of other reporters, women reporters I've had on the Women Rule podcast, what your experiences have been as a woman reporting in Washington. Margaret, you're both young women. Nancy's like, no, you're both young women. You know, what do you ever feel that you're at an advantage or disadvantage because you're a woman reporting on tech?
I don't ever feel like it's a disadvantage. My background before I was reporting on tech was I was a police reporter. So I'm kind of used to being the only woman around. And sometimes in the tech space that happens, you might be one of very few female reporters in a room or in a conference or whatever. I don't feel like it's a disadvantage or it's ever really made too much of an issue. I will say that if men are going to like explain things and painstakingly detail things I already know, it's helpful as a reporter just to get that check on this in these technology issues. So I mean, yes, I'm sure that sometimes people underestimate me, and maybe it's because I'm a young woman, but I can use that to my advantage. So that's what I'm going to do.
That's exactly right. Nancy, what about you?
So I didn't discover the wonderful world of journalism until I was maybe 29 or 30, and worked on Capitol Hill before that. And I had a great experience on Capitol Hill. I think it's, you know, it depends on the office, how great your experience is as a woman. I had a great experience. And sometimes I'm just very thankful that I spent my 20s when I was sort of figuring stuff out a little bit more in that environment and not as a reporter.
Your perspective is actually feel very familiar to me in terms of in Washington. I feel like as a woman, people sort of always, as a young woman, people underestimated me, which always would work to your advantage because then you could always be a lot smarter and sharper than anyone would expect you to be.
I don't know. I don't enjoy being underestimated. I don't know.
I think that's right. I mean, no one wants to be underestimated, but
I think it can be helpful. I mean, sure, it doesn't feel great, but you're not a reporter to have like to feel good all the time or to feel like everyone thinks you're the greatest thing ever. Like, it doesn't, if someone wants to underestimate you, that's really on them, not you.
Do you have any advice for young women journalists, Nancy?
Well, I think every reporter should know their stuff. But I think going into a situation, having the confidence that you really do know what you're talking about, I think I find helpful, and I imagine other people would find helpful.
What about you, Margaret? Someone coming into journalism as a young woman, what advice would you give them?
Always be prepared and then over-prepare for that reason that you are going to be underestimated, so people might let things slip. And if you're prepared and you know, you can take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm. So I'm talking about. Margaret's got it. And so do you, Nancy. You're both awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For joining us for Women Rule.
Thank you.
Thanks.